Hi, everyone. It's another week, and
I have another pair of William and Harry golf shoes. They are our brilliant sponsor. Today, I have on the Ostrich Pink. These are one of the most comfortable shoes I've ever worn on and off the course. Golf Digest did make them the most comfortable golf shoe this year. So I always have the women's. They have men's as well. And it's one of the few brands in the world that makes the men's shoe as fashionable as the women's shoe. So go online, williamandharry.com. We want to thank you to them as our sponsor of this podcast to bring on an excellent guest such as the legend himself, who is joining us today. Wendy, tell us a little bit more about the legend that we have here today with us.
For sure. We are honored to have the one and only Coach Urban Meyer today, one of the most accomplished leaders in the world of college sports. Let's just take a look at what he's done. He is considered to be one of the most successful college football coaches with a career record of 187 wins and only 32 losses. 3 national championships. He is a college football Hall of Famer and a best-selling book writer. We're going to get into a lot of that today. So many things to talk about with Coach Urban Meyer today. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, it's great to be with you guys. The Power Hour.
We have 1 hour of powerful information to all of our guests here on Chatter. We're live on Chatter, but streaming to multiple other platforms. So we're glad to have you today. Let's get into it. Coach Meyer, you went from playing college football yourself, got a master's degree in sports administration, and then became a coach. Tell us how you got started in coaching and how difficult was it to recruit players being a new coach?
Well, I started at a very young age that I knew I wanted to be a coach. Not many people are fortunate like I was. I just knew at a young age that I wanted to play football and baseball as long as I could. I was a sport junkie. Eventually, genetics took over, and I figured out I wasn't going to be a professional athlete very long. I did play pro baseball for 2 years, and then I got into coaching, and I've studied all, you know, it was back in the Bo Schembechler, Woody Hayes, Joe Paterno, Bobby Bowden, incredible era of coaching, and I studied them all. I went to get my master's degree, and back in the 80s when I started, there was really no money in intercollegiate athletics. Now you get into this world, I don't agree with it, for the money piece, the television contracts and what coaches get paid and players get paid. So it was a much different era back then. I got in because I love the sport and I love to coach people. I started my career at Ohio State, got a master's degree, and then I went on a journey. I went to Illinois State, Colorado State, and then Lou Holtz, the legendary coach, called me at Notre Dame and hired me. And that was a big change. I was officially in the elite group now that I was at Notre Dame. I was 36, and my mentor pushed me to become a head coach. I did at 36 years old. And I went to Bowling Green for 2 years, Utah for 2 years, Florida for 6, and then Ohio State for 7. A lot of success, a lot of great players, a lot of great coaches. I'm very honored to be in the Hall of Fame now. So it's all great.
You know, following your career, you've just had success after success. And reading your book, and I'm not quite done with it yet, but I am so fascinated with your perspective on life. I will say this. I don't know if anybody's ever said this to you, but if you had not been a successful football coach, I have no doubt you would have been a very successful life coach. Some of the lessons in your book are truly phenomenal. Where is your perspective on life come from? No offense, but football coaches aren't exactly thought of for their personal self-reflection. You seem to have a 10,000-foot view of life in general. Where did that come from?
I was a psych major in college, and my wife's a psych major as well. She's a psychiatric nurse for a master's degree. She taught for probably 25 years, and I just was mesmerized at the way the brain works, the way you motivate people to do the unthinkable. And that's why I'm a big fan of our military. I'm on 2 foundation boards, Folds of Honor and the Veterans Golf Association. And my father was Army, his sister was Air Force. So I would say in my own world, I'm an expert on human behavior, human performance. How do you, you know, the game of football is you never wanted to equate it to the United States military, because that's not fair. What the men and women do for our country is beyond. I'm very biased. This is the greatest country on the planet that's ever existed, and our men and women who serve, to me, are all heroes. I'll never walk by a veteran or a current military person without giving a big hug and telling them thanks. So that's just the way I was raised. I believe that. I've witnessed it. I've been on USO trips. I've studied it my entire life. So I just have always been really focused on the human behavior and human performance. And in my world, how do you get people to do the hard in college football? You know, a lot of times people will focus on watching that quarterback and the success maybe a quarterback has. That's not the hard. The hard is the guy running down a kickoff at 22 miles an hour and hitting someone coming at him 15 miles an hour. That's like a car hit a wall at about 18 miles an hour. That's how the physical impact is that big. So you have to ask yourself, why does that person do that? It's not fun. He's not getting paid to do that. There has to be a means to the end. I learned that from our military. That's something I was very focused on studying. It was something I was probably pretty good at, motivating and inspiring a team for the brotherhood, for to do it for each other. There's no greater motivation than your family or the brotherhood. It's not money. It's not prestige. It's not headlines. There's no greater motivator than your family or your brother. And that's what I tried to create.
You know, you're so true. For the last 20 years, I've spent.
I lost you.
In your book, Above the Line, you talk about the 10-80-10 rule. Can you go through a little bit of that? I found that so fascinating. And what I liked so much about that, first of all, did you come up with that? Number one, I really think it's more than just the players. I mean, I really feel like this book is for anybody who's leading the team of anything, whether it be military or CEO. I really loved your 10-80-10 rule. Could you talk a little bit about that?
So any leader's job is to build an elite team, whether you be a parent, whether you be a coach, a businessman, whatever it may be. And so this is just trial and error over my career. I just came up with this about 15 years ago. In any walk of life, I don't think it's by accident. If you walk in a room, you're going to have 10% elite. And what I mean by elite is self-discipline, self-respect, and an incredible work ethic. 80% are average. They can go either way. They can be led positively or negatively. Generally speaking, very good people, but not leaders. They're followers. And then you have 10% that are defiant and disinterested. I would call them coach killers. They're the ones that if you have too many in your business is going to be in trouble. If you have a football team, you have too many of those guys, you're going to lose a lot of games and probably eventually get fired. I think everybody knows what I'm talking about. Just people that no matter what you do, you just can't get them to join in.
Yeah. Did you come up with that rule? Is that something you developed over your career? That theory? Did we lose him?
Couldn't handle it, Jen.
I haven't even gotten started. I'm just warming up, everyone. I had some real tough questions, so let's see if you can come back online. We lost you, Coach Meyer.
Okay, you want me to continue?
And I haven't even gotten to my tough questions yet.
Okay, so you got 10% elite, 80% average, and then 10% that you just kind of got to move on from if you're running a business or running a team. And I think an error that leaders make, I don't think I've seen it, I've done it, is you focus on the elite because it's fun. But the most powerful people in your organization are the upper 10%, and you have to empower them, give them power to take over your team, to take over your organization. A quick story is when I first went to Ohio State, I noticed two players. I'd get there at 6 a.m. They'd be there before us in training, and they were part of the elite group. And I explained to them the 10-80-10, and your job as the elite is to go grab one of those average people and make them be part of us. Because if the breakdown at the end of the year is 10-80-10, you're probably got an average team. If the breakdown of your team at the end of the year is 80-20-0, like when we won a national championship, you know you have a great team. How do you do that? You use the elite to build the power, pull the average up to the elite. I have these two players, fantastic guys, hard workers, great people. And I explained to them, I said, you're not allowed in here to work out anymore at 6 a.m. unless you start bringing people with you. Obviously, that wasn't clear enough. The next day, there was about four guys in there. Guess who they all were? They all were elite. Yeah, because they enjoy it. They enjoy pushing each other. Our job is not just to coach the elite. Let's go get some of the average guys. And so that same team that went 6-7 when I got hired, that elite group grew. They were 6-7 before the year I got there. After this, they went 12-0. We went undefeated. Our breakdown went from 10-80-10 to 80-20-0 because everybody wanted to be part of this elite group. And we focused on the average, not the elite. I think that's a common error to focus on the elite. You harness the elite and focus on the 80. If you can get some of that 80 to move to self-discipline, self-respect, and a great work ethic, that's when magic happens.
Wow, that is so powerful. That is a huge life lesson on a large company. And that's definitely something that I am going to implement. You have the secret to success right there. The recipe is go from 10-80-10 to 80-20. Iron sharpens iron, as we all know. And it's getting the top edge to bring out the mediocre. That's absolutely brilliant. Now, do you do keynote speaking for large companies? Are you available for that? And if so, how would we find you?
Wendy has my information, but I have an agent that handles all that for me. I don't like to travel as much as I used to, but I'll do probably 20 a year that I'll go around the country and do some pretty big events.
Oh, that's fantastic. I just love it. I could go on and on about your book. I think we're going to have a link to it. It's Above the Line. It's a New York Times bestseller. You have so many key points in here that leading from the heart. You've got the R factor. I mean, there's so many things in here. I want people to get the book, really. But what would be the things that you think in your book that are your most proud chapters or your most proud life lessons in the book? Because I'm looking at it. I don't see that there's anything that I would think anybody needs to read. What do you think the foundation, if somebody was really looking to skim the book, what areas do you think they should focus on?
I think whenever I read books, I like to read testimony as opposed to theory. I love to read things that have actually happened. I get bored with theory, if that makes sense. I'll read leadership theory about this, and you're reading from an author maybe that it's really cool, and it kind of makes a lot of sense, but then you do your homework, and this person's never done it. It's theory. When I meet with CEOs, coaches, or police chiefs, just successful people that have actually done it, that gets my attention. That's the beautiful thing about this book. There's no theory in that book. That's all testimony. Those are all things that actually happened. It's real life. It's A to B. Situation came up. This is how we handled that situation. This is the result. And as life shows you, it's not always perfect, but there's truth in there that maybe things didn't work. But people who've read it told me, especially people I trust, it forces you to take a step back, say, wait a minute, I've never tried that, or let's try that.
Well, I've got one more question, and I know Wendy and Credit, I've got to jump in, but I do have to say, you can't have a testimony without a test. Where do you think in your point in career was your biggest test? What was your biggest test that defined your thought process to say, this is not going to break me? Because people say, you see the glory, but you don't know my story. There had to have been some tough times that you went through, some tests that got you from good to great. What would you think your biggest test was in your entire career? Because you have this beautiful testimony. We want to know where the test was.
Yeah, I've also had the negative. It came from a family that my father never missed a game. It wasn't the perfect family, but it was pretty close. I was very fortunate. I had a mom and dad and two wonderful sisters. And then as I started my journey, I started missing a lot of my kids' events. That really bothered me. I used to kind of make fun of that old guy that would sit in a chair and he would have a lot of money and maybe trophies behind him and say, well, I miss my kids grow up. I miss my grandchildren. I would say that's never going to happen to me. And it happened. When I was at the University of Florida, I went through some depression. I went through anxiety. I went through, and it wasn't because we were winning. It was the fact I was missing my children do stuff. I was missing, I became that man that I didn't want to become. And so I stepped away for a year and tried to get my mind right. And then I went to Ohio State. I also was part of an article with another author, but it's about I'm not the lone wolf. And you gals have probably gone through it. I would say everybody, at some point, you go through that moment and you say, is this really worth it, what I'm doing? And when you start thinking about your children, your wife, your life, your faith, and you're like, wait a minute, there's a lot of people and I'm fortunate I got everything I need. I'm not worried about that, but time's fleeting as well. And all of a sudden you wake up one day and your little girl's 34 years old with three children. You're like, what just happened? Why did I miss that for that? And you get that reflective moment when you're in it. That's when your mind plays game with you. And it happened to me. It broke me down. I was a broken person for a few months where I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. I don't want to win one more game and put my health in jeopardy and be away from my kids. I don't want to do that. So I stepped away for a year and then I went to Ohio State. The one moment as far as a career would probably be in 2014 at Ohio State when we lost our starting quarterback. We had two unknowns behind him, but we found a way. We lost a game early on and won the rest of them, won a national championship with a team that really was not picked to win a national championship with the third string quarterback. And that's when I really realized, wait a minute now, there's a lot of power. There's more power than just talent. The power of the heart and the mind overwhelms talent. And that's what we did.
That's beautiful. Corinne, yeah, Wendy and I were just talking before you came on about you took a third string quarterback. It's so funny because Wendy was just talking about how does he do that?
Exactly. How do you train your athletes to perform under pressure? Football, I mean, so much pressure on these guys and so many people on the stands watching, so many people on TV, so much at stake for them as far as even their careers going further into NFL. How did you train them to handle the pressure?
This is something I love. This is something I spent a lot of time studying, and I lived in the laboratory for close to 40 years. So when you watch tennis and golf, and those are the individual sports. So when I watch a pro golfer, and I'm great friends with a bunch of those guys, and I see them out on the course in the Masters or US Open, I'm watching that guy and he makes a terrible mistake. There's no one to lift him up. Then you go to a team sport, and the ones that I know very well are baseball, football, and basketball. I spent my whole life, obviously, football in particular. But when an athlete in football fails, the first thing that happens is his team comes and picks him up. The mindset of a team versus the mindset of an individual sport, and to this day, it amazes me. I've done as much research as I can. I've talked to so many pro golfers about that in individual sports, like a tennis and golf, because I love those sports, and I'm amazed at the pressure situations, and there's no teammate to pick you up. I remember Jordan Spieth in Augusta National. He's leading the Masters. This is several years ago. He throws two in the water at Amen Corner on number 12. And I'm watching it. I stand up and I'm like, go grab him. Where's your teammates at? In golf, there's no teammate. So it's all about mental toughness and team talk, self-talk. You got to get yourself through it. In a team environment, it's mental toughness, but it's also someone's got to be there to lift you up. And the greatest teams I've been a part of are the ones that within seconds, there's players to help each other through those moments. I might write a book somewhere down the road about that because I just think it's mesmerizing about the mindset of an individual athlete versus a team athlete. And I think it's completely different.
We would love to see a book about that.
You might come out with another book.
I think that would be great. I think there'd be a lot of people that would be interested in reading about that. And speaking of book, in your book, you talked about event plus response equals outcome. That to me is similar to the stressful part of the game. Can you talk about your philosophy about that?
Yeah, I wear it every day. See the E plus R equals O. So Tim Kite was my, unfortunately passed away a little over a year ago. and he was my leadership consultant at Ohio State. And it's a behavioral model about leading yourself. And E stands for event, R stands for response, and O stands for outcome. And you can't control the events that happen in your life. There's hundreds that happen every day, some real serious, some not so serious. The R is your response to that event. And that will lead to the outcome you sometimes desire or sometimes don't. For example, the easiest way to look at it is an event in your life, you go out and have a couple of drinks and you're walking to your car. An event just hits you. You got your keys in your hand and you're going to get in that car and drive home. You just had some drinks. So above the line or below line response is what usually happens. Above the line, let's first talk about below line. It's an impulsive behavior. I'm going to get in the car, I'm going to drive slow, and I'm going to take the back roads home because I drank too much. Okay, that's an R. What's an above-the-line response? I'm going to hand the keys to my wife, to whomever, or I'm going to take an Uber. I'm not going to drive home. We're human beings. We're failed people. God, that's very clear. We make mistakes. Above the line and below the line, that's the name of the book, responses are below the line is impulsive. Impulsive behavior gets in trouble. We're humans. Above the line, intentional, well thought out behavior saves the day. I just gave you an example. You have too much to drink, what do? Above the line, I throw my keys to someone else, I get a ride home. Below the line, I'll be okay. I'm not that far from home, I'll go ahead and drive. The outcome is dependent upon what you do. I'll give you another story. I had a player at Ohio State, and he was a great player. He finds out his girlfriend's cheating on him. He was drinking. He looked down on his wrist. He had been trained for 3 years about E plus R equals O. So what's below the line behavior in college when your girlfriend's cheating on you and you're an alpha male? I'm going to go beat the shit out of her and beat the shit out of him. That's impulsive behavior. If he would have done that, he would have been in jail and his career would have been over. He looked at his wristband, and I used to teach him to actually snap the wristband. Snap. It's called pattern interrupt. Get your mind right. He called his coach at 2 o'clock in the morning. He told him what happened. He'd been drinking. His coach spent 2 hours on the phone with him. When he was done, the kid went to bed, woke up in the morning, broke up with his girlfriend, became a first round draft pick, and is living a very wonderful life. Why did he do that? He was trained to, when the event hit, the event his girlfriend cheated on. How's he going to respond to it? And there's three key components about that. When you hit with an event, you press pause, get your mind right, and step up. Press pause, gather information. What the hell's going on here? Number two, get your mind right, calm down. And then finally, number three, I'm going to do the right thing here. If you do that, the positive outcomes far outweigh the negative outcomes. If you impulsive react, bad things usually happen.
I feel like you should go into ministry. I could listen to you for an hour. Wendy, that was a great question. I'm so glad you asked that. What a response. Wendy, wow.
So good. Credit, I know you had some questions about injuries.
Thank you.
About that.
So nice to meet you, Coach Urban. I'm a big tennis player. I'm a singles player. So when you said it's an individual sport, it really hit me. And also, I'm a golfer. That's why I connected with Wendy and Rhett. And of course, we love William and Harry. My question to you is, as a player, they're going to go through so many injuries. And at what point do you have that conversation with them saying, we're not going to let you play anymore? How does that look in your world of competitive sports? Because I'm always curious of at what point you're like, okay, you can't play anymore, or how far do you have to sit out? What does that conversation look like? They've devoted their entire life to that particular sport.
It's the hardest thing as a coach you deal with. When you see a young person is devoted, the amount of time and effort that tennis, golf, football, all these sports. Again, I don't think people realize the amount of time in the game that I coach. You'd see this person train 6 to 8 hours a day. And then all of a sudden something freak happens in August and it disappears. You see this whole world come crashing down. For a player that has a grounded family, there's a firm foundation of faith and family and reality. A lot of times we can move on through that fairly quickly. for the player that unfortunately doesn't come from that, where there's not much faith, there's certainly not much family in the whole world is this. I've been in some situations where it's in despair. I talk guys off the ledge. I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, there's worse things that happen to life, obviously. But when someone has devoted their entire life for that moment, and that moment's taken from them by really something they didn't do, is just a freak accident. So there's no cookie cutter way of handling that. Every human being's different. As a coach, you better know that background, that support system. You have to know that person's faith, what's driving this human being. Because if you could say the wrong thing, you could do the wrong thing, you could leave them alone when they're not supposed to be left alone. It tugs into my heart even to this day when I think back of some of the difficult things I've witnessed players go through with injuries and their careers are over. That's a great question, but a tough question.
So my follow-up to that is, once they get injured and you've tried all the traditional remedies, do you look outside of that and explore other types of treatment? There's just such a broad scope of new technology that's out there. Do you look at that because you exhausted everything so that you can give the ability to go back and play the game?
Another great question. That wasn't my job. My job was a coach, so I certainly... You know, I was lucky to coach at Ohio State in Florida, so we had a medical staff that you can imagine, as good as there is in the world. We would push and push and check every option for that. But it wasn't me. It was our staff doing that.
I have a question for you. You've had a very successful career. Every career has ups and downs, lessons learned. For the people listening today, if you had it to do all over again from day one, what would you do differently and what would you do the same?
A great question. I've actually been asked that several times. I try not to look back and say, what if, what if, what if, what if. I rather look at and say how appreciative I am. When you look at my career and the players that I coached, there is an argument that those are the greatest players that's ever played the game. When you look at my coaching staff of 30 years, there's an argument that the finest group of coaches that of coaches ever put together surrounded them. So I don't really go there. There are certainly moments you say, boy, I would have changed that in a minute, but you know what? And I don't burn any minutes on that. I burn minutes at this point in my life in my career saying, wow, are you shitting me? Think about the cool things that I was able to do with these incredible people that I was surrounded by. So that's where I spend my time. But certainly there's things I look back, but I keep myself from going there.
Never look back,
That's it, Wendy. We say that all the time. You never look back.
Never look back.
People ask me that in building a business, what would I have done differently and what would I have done the same?
Well, you see, when you look back with gratitude, that's different than looking back with anxiety. Reality is that time is finite. There's only a certain amount of time. When you're looking back on anything other than gratitude and certainly learning moments, but keep going forward. Go this way. Don't go that way.
That's amazing. And your book, Above the Line, I keep talking about it because I think it's a life book. I don't think it's a football book. I think it's a life book. What's interesting, and when I was reading some of it, I thought, I wonder how this would apply to today's NC2A with the money. And I know you've gotten asked this probably 10,000 times, but coaching today obviously would be quite different. Guys earning cash, how do you think that would affect some of these principles, especially the 10-80-10? You talked about your 10% is there because they're self-driven. And now it seems like the money's kind of ripped that away.
That's a great question. You put together some really great questions. I don't have the answer for that. I made a decision about 4 years ago that I'm done, and I am done. I see what's happening, and the game's never been stronger, college football, as far as the product on the field. But I also worry about the residual damage when everybody, including 17, 18-year-olds, think about that, when their primary focus is money. I grew up in an era where the primary focus when you're 17 and 18 is shut your mouth and learn from your elders and respect authority and get great grades and learn how to become an adult. I'm not sure that's what it is now. Now I'm seeing 17, 18-year-olds that have agents and handlers, everybody's worrying about this money, this money, this money. I'm thinking that there's a chance that money's gone when you're 23. What do you do then?
Strips away the brotherhood. And I was a Division I athlete for the University of Miami, okay? Like you said, we're all in it together. I was a swimmer, but I could not imagine what it must be like to try to coach players for the brotherhood when all they're after is the money for themselves and who's going to be on the flyer this week and who's going to be promoted that week. How would you handle that as a coach? What advice do you have for the current coaching staff that's trying to deal with that now?
I've actually asked that question to many of my colleagues that are still in it. You can tell that most of the coaches are now much younger. I think the older guys are kind of cashed in because it's so different. I'm one of those guys that I have no interest in that. I'll be honest, I've not spent a lot of time on that because I'm trying to spend time with grandkids and travel and get my golf handicap down. I'm not worried about the coach players making $5 million and there's other guys making $10,000. To answer your question, I don't know.
I love that answer, by the way.
There's better in the house.
And Rhett, I don't know, and I'm not going to spend much time figuring it out.
You're looking forward, right, to what you're doing now, which is being an analyst on Fox Sports, right? Tell us about that and what all is going on with that. Rhett tells me you were covering the Ohio State-Texas game coming up. Tell me about all the things happening with you over there and how you're liking it.
My final game when I decided to retire at the Rose Bowl, I was 55 years old. That was always kind of my target to, because I want to go live life a little bit. I didn't want to wake up 75 years old and I want to live. And so I made the decision. Fox Sports came to me and made a good sales pitch, said, do you want to do this? And I was intrigued. I did my homework and I signed on and I've been with Fox ever since and I love it. I have Brady Quinn from Notre Dame, Matt Leiter, the USC quarterback, and Mark Ingram from Alabama. Rob Stone is our host and they're like brothers. I can't wait. We leave tomorrow. It's a huge game in Columbus against Texas. The coaching chapter is closed. This is the next chapter is competitive. We're College Game Day on ESPN is kind of the leader for the last 25, 30 years. We're trying to catch them. So there's competitive juices there flowing. And I love being engaged in the game still. But my biggest decision on Friday nights now is steak, chicken, or fish. It's not whether to go for it on fourth down or not.
Well, you remind me of one of my friends, because I live in Vegas, and I play golf with a guy named Oral Hershiser. You know Oral?
I believe Oral Hershiser played at Bowling Green, Ohio. That's where I got my first job.
The thing is, I don't know much about baseball. So when I met Oral and I'm playing poker with him, I was just pushing him around. I don't know anything about baseball. And I treated him like a normal poker player. And we just got to be really good friends. It turns out he was a baseball player, a famous one at that. And I didn't know any different. He's the announcer now for MLB. And he's really enjoying that. I think now he's moved out of Vegas and back on the road in LA. But what is your legacy, Urban? How do you want to be remembered?
Well, my daughter lives in Vegas at Southern Highland, and I'm an honorary member of Southern Highland Golf Course. I love it there. It's a great place. I would say that at the end of the day, we won a lot of games, won a lot of championships. I believed and cared deeply about your players. I'm looking at three gals, very successful gals. I think there's a misunderstanding of love sometimes, and love to me is not soft. Love is hard. If you love a player so much that you see greatness in that player, you'll do anything to find that greatness. And I mean, that means push them. That means piss them off. That means hug them up. That means grind them. Same thing with my three wonderful children and now three wonderful spouses. My kids married and six grandbabies now. So when you love your child and you see that child doing something wrong, you got to stop it. And no matter how hard it is, even if you lose that friendship, you have to stop that because love is stronger than friendship, if that makes sense. And I would tell our players all the time that I don't need any 19-year-old friends. I'm good on the friend market. If we get along, fine. If not, that's fine too. We don't have to get along. I got a job to do. And if I'm coaching you, your parents want me to push your ass until we find that greatness in you. There's greatness in you. And I'm going to find it. It's going to be awful times. And same thing as a parent, there's times where we were fortunate. It didn't happen often, but a couple of times that we stopped it in the tracks Was it uncomfortable and awful for months and weeks? Yeah, it was awful. But if you look at the job description of a parent, nowhere in there does it say friends. When you say the word coach, there's nowhere in the definition of coach or a job description of a coach where it says, hey, be friends with them. I never looked at it that way. If we get along, it's usually makes it much easier. But I've also had great players that I couldn't stand and they couldn't stand me. But they look back now, 20 years from now, they're going to say, hey, thanks, man. Because I was an asshole as a kid, you stopped it. Imagine that feeling, knowing you could have stopped it and you didn't. That's something that I can look in the mirror right now and say, if I saw it, I didn't stop it, but at least I tried.
Yeah, that's a good point. My child actually told me this the other day. I had given him some advice. He did not take it. Years later, I reminded him of it. And he said, I was too young to make that decision. You should have made it for me. So yeah, they don't appreciate it maybe now, but they will later. I know Rhett has a question here. Rhett, go ahead and ask your question for Coach Urban.
First of all, this is really great. And I'm super emotional right now because my dad was a pro athlete and he told me when I was young, he said, look, you respect your elders and the people that have done so for you. When I met you, you're a little inspirational, absolutely, but you're a competitor. And what I don't like about today's age is why do these people give participation trophies and things like that? And you want to strive to be the best you can be. What do you tell these kids now? You were such a great coach and an inspiration. What do you tell them? It's like, look, you don't win a contract by coming in second. You get nothing. And now this stuff is so different from when I was brought up. My dad played for George House and the Bears, and he was very quiet. It's really for respect or for the love of the game, not for money. Now these kids are coming in, and they have a contract for $1 million, $2 million, and their lineman's making $10,000. I think it's wrong. Where do you go from that?
You know, I'm a capitalist. I believe in our country as a capitalistic society. I believe in a free market. I believe every human being should have a right to make money off his or her name. And that's this great country is built on that. However, I don't like the fact when you're talking about young people making decisions, there are people making generational money. And I hope that, you know, one of my things I try to do is educate them and surround them by people. You've heard horror stories that 70 or 80% of all NFL athletes are broke 3 years after they're done playing. I don't know if that's true or not, but I can see that happening because they're not educated. They're not surrounding themselves with the right people. And then they wake up one day and say, what the hell did I just do? So the way I've always looked at Rhett is this, is that I have a job and it's as a father and as a coach. Whatever God puts in front of you that you're expected to lead, I would challenge whoever's listening as business leaders, don't treat them as like employees, treat them as like people. And you push their ass because you believe there's greatness in each one of them. And if you tell them that, they appreciate that. If you don't tell them that there's greatness in you and I'm going to find it, sometimes it's really hard. Sometimes there's tears. Sometimes there's bad language. Sometimes there's, you know, a couple of years of we're going to can't stand each other. That's all part of the, I think God created it that way. That's called resistance. That's called friction. To me, that's strength. It's not always about the group hug. I don't give a shit about the second place trophy. That's not the second place trophy. It's a garbage can outside for those things. We're here to win. I'm coaching you like I would my team because you're good enough to win. And if we don't maximize you, then I screwed up. And that pisses me off, Wendy, because I know there's greatness in you. And we're going to find it. We have not found it yet. Once we do, that's when magic happens. All this other shit doesn't matter. Magic happens when you maximize who you are. That's the way I coached.
I tell you what, I mean, if anybody doesn't respect what you've done, it's crazy. My oldest son was super talented, All-American hockey player, and my dad played hockey. I listened to you talk at the Folds of Honor, and I said, this is my dad. Now, you're younger than me. I probably look younger than you because I'm in great shape or whatever.
Leave it to Rhett.
So But my dad told me, he said, you play to win. And there's much more enjoyable about winning than losing. And I got that. He said, you don't need to spike the ball. I was a pretty good athlete. And my kids turned out to be good. But I was really hard on my older kids. He was great. You've learned to take whatever you had and make, they were mediocre. You made them great. You can't win 3 national championships without teaching kids to be great. The problem I have with NIL and all this stuff is, why should a quarterback get $3 million and his lineman getting $10,000? The coach from UVA, I think it was Bennett, said, we got to have some salary cap and make it worthwhile. Why? I signed the contract. I had a college scholarship. And if you left within a year, you didn't get any money. What do you think about that? I think it's so wrong that the college has extended you the invitation to be part of their program. But if you leave, you should have to at least sit out a year, so it kind of sets you back. What do you think about?
Yeah, the two hot buttons are NIL, which is, you know, I believe in capitalism. If you can profit off your name, that's what makes this country unlike any other. Absolutely. That's not what happened. What happened is boosters are just getting tons of money and just pay for play, which is illegal. It's not supposed to happen. But you hit something else, is the transfer portal. And I had a group of players here from my first job. It was called Bowling Green State University. And we had a couple of bourbons down in my basement. We're laughing. And they said, Coach, back in 2001, I was young. I was a maniac. They said, if the transfer portal was around when you were a coach then, everybody would have quit. And my comment was, I was trying to get you to quit. I wanted to find out how tough you, I mean, college football is tough. In the third quarter against your rival, when you're not feeling great, you're hurt, it's maybe 20 degrees. I want to find out. I don't want to find out then you're soft or you're not all in. I want to find out now. So we put them through basically Navy, Army, Ranger, special op training. My objective, I wanted to push you to the point where you were starting to say, do I really want to do this? Because that's when decisions are made. I'm in or I'm out. If it's easy, anybody can do it.
I know we have a couple of minutes left, and yes. I want to end on a fun note. Are you sipping something special? Because a little birdie told me you might have your own liquor line. Is that true?
Oh, I just had a little old-fashioned tonight. I have some friends upstairs. I do have Los Linderos. I'm an investor in tequila. Okay. No added Los Linderos. And it's an upstart company. We just started. It's all over the place now. And there's no sugar, no additives. And I'm biased. It's the best tequila out there.
I had to know if that was true or not. I hadn't heard that before tonight. So I had to ask. What was the name of that one more time?
Los, L-O-S, Linderos, L-I-N-D-E-R-O-S.
Los Linderos, you heard it here, guys. You're going to have to get out there and check it out.
I know we got some major tequila drinkers listening tonight. I just know that. We actually have some SEAL guys listening tonight, so that's why I wanted you to spell it slowly for this. So they know where to find it.
I know we only have a few minutes left, so I've got to ask this question to you, Coach Urban. What is a day in the life of Coach Urban Meyer like? I mean, are you doing the cold plunges? Are you meditating? Are you doing supplements and running? What is it that you do in your daily life? The discipline you have, I'm sure, is part of it. I know a lot of people are curious about that.
Well, the good thing is I'm married to a health nut, so we really try to take care of ourselves. We've been married 36 years, and she's in great shape and works out. I do tennis, I lift, and I do boxing, and I try to eat right. You know, when you're in Sarasota, Florida, we have a lot of people visit. We have to discipline ourselves not to drink every night because people come visit us all the time. In the fall, I'm gone the whole fall. I leave every Thursday. I'm back Monday. And sometimes I'll go visit our grandkids. So all fall, I'm gone. But in the spring, Sarasota, Florida is spectacular. We love the water. We live right on the water. And we have 6 grandbabies, 3 in Vegas, 2 here, and 1 in Ohio. So we go see them. Our rule is once a month, we have to see them. So we bounced around quite a bit.
Well, you mentioned Vegas. One last thing. What do you think about us finally getting our football team? And I know we're going to get baseball, hopefully men's basketball soon. I mean, I have season ticket to the Golden Knights, the women's basketball, because we didn't have NBA yet. I mean, what are your thoughts on Vegas having team sports?
Well, I'm a huge fan. Vegas, you know, when I was younger, it used to be where everybody went and got stupid drunk and gambled and act like idiots and all that. Now you go there and there's no better food in the world than Vegas. You have the Knights, the Raiders, the A's coming. You have incredible golf courses, great shows. I don't gamble, and I love Vegas. I love the restaurants, the strip, the golf, and my daughter lives in Southern Islands. I think Vegas is a completely different animal than it was years ago. I love it there.
We do too.
Well, Wendy, yeah. You want to wrap it up? Because I can't wait for the next book.
I have a couple of questions for Coach. You've played, and I played golf with Coach Meyer. He's a ridiculous competitor. That's fine. What's your favorite golf shoe in the world? And what is your favorite golf course in the world? And if you had any doubt, living or deceased, where would you play and who would be your foursome?
Those are tough questions. So William and Harry is a shoe that obviously the sponsor here at a Revitur shoe. I never heard of it. We were at a veterans event and someone handed me the shoe. I put them on. I played golf with you. You're a hell of a golfer, but you're a really interesting entrepreneur who I love talking to. That's the best shoe I've ever put on my foot. I'm going to speak at the Bowling Green at the Hall of Fame event and I was packing. I'm wearing that as my dress shoe now. So I'm wearing
it. That's awesome.
I'm also going to play Shinnecock and National with the same shoe that I'm wearing to a banquet tomorrow night. I never had anything like it. Every person I play golf with, I say, try this thing on. And it's the deer skin. You need a shoehorn to get that thing on because it's such a good fit. Best shoe out there. All right. Second question. Augusta National is by far my favorite course I've ever played. Cypress is probably a close second. I love Southern Highlands. Wade Hampton and Cashiers, Muirfield and Columbus, those are all courses I love. Also, Pebble and Monterey Peninsula. I played that this. My God, is that beautiful. But if I had to say you get one swing, I'm playing with Arnold Palmer. I'm playing with Jack Nicklaus, who I played with about 10 times. Jack Nicklaus is a huge Ohio State Buckeye. So I got to play with him about 10 times every year when I was a coach there. We played. I'd play with him again. And then who would be? Oh, and then Tiger. You imagine playing at that foursome? I'd make sure there was money on the line because I want to see those guys compete.
I got asked this question on golf. Who would be your foursome? It was Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, and I picked Tom Watson. And
I said, yeah.
Because it's so, and my kids like, why didn't you pick me? I said, look, I played with you all the time. This was like the dream thing. And you could have picked your son or whatever, but you know what's cool about life is they need to learn from the people. Arnold Palmer, to me, was the greatest man that ever lived. He did stuff in business that incomprehensible that started. He made Tiger Tiger, and now you have Scottie Scheffler, who's a different type player, but probably the best player of all of them, but he's a family man. Family comes first. The money that raised by this man for Folds of Honor, the veterans. This is an exceptional person. He was a great coach, don't get me wrong. But he learned from his parents and his family how to be a great person. And a lot of people, we don't have that. I had the greatest family ever. I was blessed. He's done more in college football sports than probably 99.5% of any coaches because he has a work ethic. And a faith that I can't wait to meet your kids and especially your wife. What a great person.
Tremendous. I have so many things I want to say, but I hope maybe if you ever get bored, you start life coaching because I know I would hire you.
Definitely.
I would absolutely hire you today to be my life coach. And Coach Meyer, let's get a picture before we go. It's been a real treat to talk to you. And I know that we're streaming. I know there's a group of SEALs watching. They do a gold family tournament where SEAL Team 6 go against Delta Force and they invite celebrities. I have a feeling there's going to be an invitation coming your way.
Hey, Coach, before you go, tell them that you're going to be a national spokesperson for what's the brand shoe?
The best shoe on the market.
They are truly fantastic.
Shoe on the market.
Yes, we do agree with that.
Getting that picture for us. Everybody smiles.
Hey, everybody smiling. Yeah, everybody have a smile. Before we go, I want to say one thing. If you follow us on our YouTube or subscribe to our YouTube channel, we are going to give away two of Urban Meyer's books. Okay, so go ahead and get on over to our YouTube channel and subscribe. You can rewatch Coach Urban's episode with us. You do not want to miss this book. Above the Lessons in Leadership and Life. You definitely want to check out the book. It's amazing. Thank you, Coach Urban. I know you have a big weekend coming up. We'll all be watching you on Fox Sports this weekend. And we thank you for your time.
There's the question. You like Ohio State or Texas in this game? That's a great big question.
I can't give that until Saturday.
That's right.
So, you know, sneak peeks tonight, I guess.
Guys, you have no idea how lucky his wife is. He's so cool.
It's incredible.
Have a good night.
Thank you. To our audience, we appreciate it.